What do you call this?
This is The Vibe.
You've got The Vibe.
My favorite podcast.
It's the WCLT Vibe Podcast.
Thanks to Licking Knox Goodwill.
And now with the latest Vibe, here's Graham Campbell.
My guests today are
Linda Nicodemus. I'm a director for the South Licking Watershed Conservancy District.
And I'm Christy Hawthorne. I'm the director of the Licking County Soil and Water Conservation District.
The South Licking Water Conservancy District works with local landowners and communities on a variety of issues, including water management problems, flooding, and conserving and developing water supplies. This week, the Conservancy began a series of meetings designed to hear from stakeholders about priority maintenance required to control flooding.
Well, one of the things that in this process, the Soil and Water District found that we have 403 debris fields within our watershed, just the South Licking watershed. That's a lot of debris fields. So maintenance has not been happening in our watershed for a number of years. So we have debris fields, we have bank erosion, we have roadways and bridges that have been affected, you know, communities. So we're trying to do a study to put together a plan. Our plan for our watershed district is back from 1980. So we need to update that plan and see how the water's changed, where it changes at, what are the issues. So we need the residents and municipalities and townships. We need all of the key involvement so that we can identify throughout our watershed, which goes as far as Hartford Township, Johnstown, down to Newark. That's a large area through Granville, Alexandria. We're part of three counties, Licking County, Fairfield County, and Perry County. So we're working in cooperation with all three counties' boards of commissioners and all three counties' soil and water conservation districts to try to gather the best information and come up with the best plan that will help all of the property owners and municipalities and township governments with flooding issues.
Let's circle back and maybe define our terms for just a minute. When you say debris fields, you're not talking about dumps per se, or are you?
No, I'm talking about log jams.
So if you remember back in 2018, I think it was, where Statens Bridge Road, the bridge there was inundated with logs and a log jam, and it knocked it off its foundation and had to be replaced. We're trying to be proactive and save our infrastructure and structures, personal structures, business structures, from having impacts like that.
So debris fields are in the waterway itself?
Correct. Okay. The reason why I use the term debris field is flooding. Flooding adds to those debris fields, not just trees. We have debris fields out there with somebody's hot tub in it. So hot water tanks, anything that people need to understand that what's stored out in their yard, if they're in a floodplain, it needs to be anchored or secured so that it doesn't add to the debris or clog up culverts, hit bridges. You know, this caused some heavy impacts. As a matter of fact, Newark is already looking at replacing the bridge on Cherry Valley Road, and because it's in such bad shape from all the debris that hit that over a period of time.
The trees that end up in the water and create these log jams, those are the county's responsibility to remove? That's not the landowner's responsibility?
Not actually, there's where some of the concern lies, is the county does send out the letter that says if the rivers or streams run through your property, it's for you to maintain. These big debris fields with the ash borer trees and a lot of the natural movement of the river, when it's going around debris, it starts eroding into the bank, and then big root bulbs and trees fall. There isn't a homeowner or a property owner that I am aware of, even a farmer, that can get into the channel and remove these debris. The permit alone through Army Corps and other entities, you have to be a public entity to do that. So if it's not one log that they can pull out with a tractor, it's not something that is feasible for them to remove. So that's why they need help, and that's what we're wanting to do. If it was one tree, yes, but this is 403 debris fields that 13 of them are total blockages of the river. There's not one landowner that can come up with we had a small one that we got a grant, a $50,000 grant, to remove in front of a channel, and it was considered a small, but the sediment bank, after it had been there that long, was huge under it, and it doesn't remove the sediment bank. It only removes the logs, and that was $50,000, and that was only, the grant was $50,000, so the commissioners had to put in the other 20%.
Oh, my
And
goodness.
That was a small log jam.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it's mostly cost prohibitive for an individual landowner to deal with a larger debris field, but we are encouraging the landowners to be mindful of managing the flood waves, so when it does flood, it doesn't take debris down the water, downstream, to add to the problem.
If it's out in the middle of nowhere and there's no bridges, no public involved, it's not causing problems, then we don't have to focus right away on that debris field. We need to prioritize, when you have 403 debris fields, which ones are most important so that we can try to receive grant money and funding support to remove those.
Do these debris fields impact the quality of our drinking water?
They're to an extent. So the debris fields that back up and build blockages, the water still has to get through. So it will take the easiest route, which is typically eroding the banks of the stream bank or the river bank, and sediment is then carried away in the water. Sediment is the number one pollutant of water, and that is something that the drinking water plants would have to remove from the water before they could process it.
I guess that leads me to my next question. Does the effect of bank erosion contribute to the addition of agricultural runoff as a pollutant into the waterway?
It does. It's very important to have what we call riparian buffers, which is either grasses or trees along the waterways and agricultural production fields, because that does filter out the nutrients prior to entering the waterway. So if the bank is eroding and falling off into the river where the fields have been treated, it does lend itself to the chance of pollutants getting into the water. The agricultural community is regulated through Ohio Department of Agriculture of when they can put nutrients or fertilizer or herbicides on the fields, and they are not supposed to do that 24 hours before a rain event. So their guiding principles help reduce that chance of having runoff into the waterway.
The majority of the farmers and farming community, they understand. Those companies that do lawn control and lawns and, you know, where they're putting weed control or green, they want greener grass, they're not regulated as much. And if you're on the lake bank and in these nicer home developments and you see True Green or Green Lawn or those, they have to have a license, but they need to not put that on 3 days. They should wait and do it 3 days prior to a rain so that the lawn soaks it up and it doesn't run off into the stormwater, which runs straight into the streams and river ways. So a lot more of the phosphorus and nitrates and things are coming from just people fertilizing their lawn and not knowing, and companies coming in to meet their schedules so the businesses don't know, hey, you know, you should make sure that they wait, which is why this phone conversation and interview is great, because maybe we can get the word out to the businesses and industries and homeowners who utilize those services or put it on themselves to look and be more conscious of what they're doing, especially if they're in an urbanized setting where you have street drains and curbs where it's just going to run right off your lawns, down the sidewalk, into the street, and right to the river. Mm-hmm. Those are what are affecting us the most.
If you're not a landowner and you don't live on a river that's in the watershed, how do you convince people that they have a stake in the work that you're doing?
Well, you know, looking at the big picture, there's only so much water in this world, and it is recycled constantly through the entire process of rain, evaporation, rain, and as it moves through the world. We're very lucky here in Ohio with, sometimes I call it lucky or blessed, sometimes I'm calling it cursed when we have flooding, but, you know, the Great Lakes themselves hold 70% of the fresh water in the world, and we're stewards of this water that is recycled through the system, and want everyone to be aware that there's only so much water that we need to take care of it.
As you know, we have natural resources that we only have the supply that we have. We only have the soil that we have. We can't produce new soil. We can't produce new water, and we cannot produce new air. We can try to clean it up and do the best that we can, and 70% of the water in the world is salt water. 30% of the water is fresh water, and we can only drink at this moment fresh water. So it is very important that we manage the water that we have as best as we can. The judges reopened this conservancy district at the end of 2015, and their direction was help everyone, get everyone involved, and let's try to reduce flooding and the impacts of flooding as much as we can. We can't stop flooding in a floodplain. What we can do is help the water flow as within its banks and its riverine area to the best of the ability that we have with the least amount of damages.
The next in-person meeting will be on May 24th at 6 p.m. in the Hebron Administration Building, 934 West Main Street in Hebron. You can also participate via Zoom if you go to the Conservancy District website, slwcd.org. There'll be a link there for the necessary meeting information.